Well, thank you for the introduction. I'm not Tom Chastain. I'm Stephen Guy. Tom wasn't able to be here, and I put this together. So, there's three of us here to present these talks. So we're going to jump right in and look at a few things about a coordinated project in the Pacific Northwest. It was funded by federal funds called Sun Grant funds. And that was a three-year program, so we have a considerable amount of information to look at as a result of that. And what I wanted to do first, because I'm the lead-off person with these Camelina talks, is actually give you a little bit of background about Camelina per se, so that people that aren't as familiar with the crop perhaps will have a little bit of background basis to understand the talks that we're about to undertake a little bit better. It's Camelina. Camelina sativa is also known as false flax. It's an oilseed crop, of course, in the mustard family. It's grown and all the cultivars and everything that we're going to be looking at are spring type cultivars. There are winter type cultivars that are available. It's grown in the spring. It's a short season winter spring annual crop. It's also an ancient crop. It's been around for many thousands of years. And in Europe, it can be grown on marginal agricultural lands. It requires fairly low cultural inputs. I think we'll see some of that today. And the seed can contain 35 to 40% oil. I was in another Camelina talk earlier and saw up to 50% oil under irrigated conditions in the Arizona. I was quite surprised it would go that high. I haven't seen that in any of our work. Crop improvement agronomic knowledge is fairly limited just because it's a fairly new crop for North America. And there's been a little bit of commercial acreage already started. Originally started that in Montana, but there's also been a little bit in the tri-state area of Oregon, Washington, Idaho. It's very cool season adapted. I really like this slide. It shows the little seedlings. They were broadcast seeded into no-till circumstances, and you can see the snow down at the bottom of the slide there, so they're happily living under those kind of cold conditions. It establishes and forms a fairly dense rosette prior to bolting, and bolts up and starts flowering. This is just prior to flowering. You can see the plant height here is probably on the order of 40 centimeters or so. And I also like this picture because it shows the phenology comparison between a winter wheat crop, as you can see bordering this strip of Camelina here. The Camelina is just coming into flower. It was seeded in the spring, early in the spring, and the winter wheat is only in the boot stage at this point in time. So you can gives you some idea of how quickly this crop also takes off and grows in the springtime. It produces small flowers. And these teardrop-shaped pods that contain usually 15 to 20 seeds in them, the seeds are quite small, 1,000 seed weight in the order of 1.2 grams. So that's very small, even for a brassica crop. This is three different plots of different seeding timings, looking at the maturity stages as we're going towards maturity. It turns golden brown prior to harvest. The pods tend to hold their seed fairly well, don't shatter too badly. I've left mature Camelina in the field for 3 weeks and not had it shatter. So some of the other brassicas, that you couldn't do that with. Camelina adaptation, short season crop, 85 to 100 days roughly. There's no seed dormancy, so anything that volunteers afterwards can be killed out. You're not going to have it perpetually coming back on the same piece of ground for years to come, much like canola likes to do. Germinates at very low temperatures, and it's very cold tolerant. We've observed down to essentially minus 20 degrees centigrade, below zero Fahrenheit, and survived spells of those kind of temperatures as seedlings. And actually, all throughout the growth cycle of the plant, it's fairly resistant to cold. Withstands drought stress fairly well. It seems to be able to come back after drought phases if we get more moisture. And I've recorded harvest indexes of about 33% with Camelina, and that's a lot higher than we see with canola. And I think that's one reason why it tends to have a lower water use than canola, so it'll fit into some drier climates as a result of that. That and its earliness also goes into that adaptation. It's a good rotation crop with small grains, just like all the brassicas are. Just to give you an idea of some of the general agronomic practices that we would be recommending, we'd like to plant early, either early, very early spring or late fall, winter-type dormant seedings, and that's going to be discussed today. It can be drilled very shallowly in the soil or broadcast seeded, and Bill Schillinger, the next speaker, is going to talk about those two things, which was part of our studies. We seed about 5.5 kilograms per hectare using adapted varieties, and I'm going to address varieties a little bit in my talk here. You seed into weed-free fields because we only have post-registered for weed control at this point in time for grassy weed control post-emergence. Avoid fields with carryover herbicides. That's a critical factor in some of our areas. It's very, just like all the brassicas, they're very sensitive to imidazolinone herbicides as well as sulfonylureas that can be carrying over in the soil. As far as fertility is concerned, Don Wysocki is going to address that in his talk. General recommendation, 80 to 150 kilograms per hectare, roughly. It can be direct cut as soon as the moisture falls below 8%. And we haven't seen problems that we see in some of the other brassica crops with insects. Flea beetles, aligus, aphid, and weevils, which we all have problems with in canola, don't cause any problem for us in camelina. So also a low input crop as well there. This is a map of the Pacific Northwest, color-coded for rainfall. And as you can probably guess, the lower the rainfall, the more intense red of the color here, up to rainforest-type precipitation up in the Cascade Range. The locations are of the studies are indicated on here. Lind is the lowest rainfall area that we have any studies at, followed by Lewiston, and then Pendleton, Pullman, Moscow, and Corvallis is the highest rainfall site. And I'll give you some data on rainfall in just a minute. In my studies that I'm going to talk about today, there's the cultivars were evaluated, and there's 18 cultivars here, 7 named cultivars. These top 3 are European in origin, the bottom are North American in origin, and several experimentals from private companies that have been doing some camelina breeding that were included in these studies. We have 18 locations. Pullman, Moscow, Lewiston, we're all, I just like to point out that we some of these were seeded in the fall and some were seeded in the spring. And that's indicated by either F or S following the year designation here. So Pullman, we had 2 years of data spring seeded, Moscow spring seeded, and Lewiston spring seeded in 08. Pendleton, there was a series of trials there, 08, 09, fall and spring seeded, and fall and spring seeded in 10 as well, 2010. Lind, very similar trials in the same years. In Corvallis, only 09 did we have a fall seeding that survived, actually. This is a shot of the Lewiston variety trial. It was seeded April 3rd, and our seeding dates are oftentimes dictated by when we can get into the field in this region. This was a wet spring and was seeded later than normal, and as a result, we got lower yields than we expected on the site. That and some bird damage as well. So there's all kinds of things that go wrong with these studies that are going to be difficult to characterize every one of them. Here I have listed the site, the year, and the season it was seeded, the precipitation at that site, and the yield that was the average yield across that trial. And as you can see, the two Pullman sites, spring seeded, were close to 3,000 kilograms per hectare yields. Both were very good trials. I'm familiar with those. I also had a fall seeded trial at Pullman in 09 that did not include all the varieties, so it's not included in the analysis here, but actually yielded a little bit close to 3,500 kilograms per hectare on average in the trial. The Moscow trial, Lewiston trial were both late seeded and did not perform as well as I expected. The Pendleton trials averaged between 1,000 and 1,700 kilograms per hectare for yield-wise across the five trials that were conducted there. In Lind, there was a very strong relationship to the available soil moisture and the amount of seed that was produced in the trial. And even though this is just an average precipitation value here, the year in 10, there was considerably more available water than there was this first year and even the second year of the studies. In Corvallis, we have plenty of precipitation. It's over in the higher rainfall area in the Willamette Valley. And they have establishment problems over there that was related to me about. I didn't have firsthand knowledge of the trials, but they had establishment problems in many years. Too much water. Brassicas don't like to have wet feet and can take out quite a bit of yield potential that way, as well as some other pest problems. I know they had slug problems in some instances, and lots of things can happen to camelina just like any other crop. Looking at the average of the seed yields across locations, the two of the European varieties, Celine and Kalina, yielded significantly higher than the remainder of the cultivars in the study, although the differences numerically are not really great. Then we have a large group of varieties that essentially yielded similarly from 1,250 down to about 1,200 kilograms per hectare here, and then two down here at the bottom. And I think these companies are looking at these for their unique oil profile qualities and not so much for yield, and that's why they're things that they were interested in, varieties that they were interested in. So, as you would probably expect, there's an interaction of cultivar and variety. And as we look at these, how do I express all that data? Well, what I did is I went in and did a rank of each of the varieties at each of the locations, starting at Pullman, Moscow, Lewiston, Pendleton, Lind, and Corvallis, going across here, and chronologically as well within each one of those sites. And you can probably see the top yielding two varieties tended to predominate as far as being up in the rankings for each of those locations for cultivar performance. Although at some locations, it doesn't appear that they did very well, such as this is the high-yielding location at Lind, and they were down towards the bottom in those trials. So there's no guarantee that they're going to perform everywhere. Interestingly enough, one of the varieties, Cheyenne, performed quite well under some circumstances. You can see some ones going across here and some single digits as well. So it was way up in the rankings at certain times, but predominantly was down in the second half of the rankings. So it's much more variable as far as its performance was concerned compared to some of the other varieties. This is a shot of Bill standing out in the field talking to growers in the camelina field. This is the variety trial over here. I think this was just last year, wasn't it, Bill, in 10?
Correct.
Just this past season, okay? And what I also wanted to do was do a comparison of the fall sown versus the spring sown as far as ranked performance of each of the varieties. And in this case, in all cases, well, when averaged across all of these locations, there was higher seed yield in the spring-seeded versus the fall-seeded. But as we do the comparisons for these varieties and look at the difference between fall-sown and spring-sown, both Kalina and Celine had the lowest difference in the fall versus spring versus some of these other varieties, which were over 200 kilograms per hectare difference in yield fall to spring. This doesn't mean that they didn't perform well in the springtime. You can see that they ranked right up there many times. But they just seem to be the best ones, perhaps, that we should select for fall seeding. For some reason, they tend to do better when they, relatively speaking to the other varieties, fall sown than some of the other varieties that are available. So that was an interesting finding in the study, that we had that kind of a variety selection that could be going on for different types of sowing strategies for the crop. This is a picture of the Corvallis trial just this past year. And what you don't see is the vacant plots, which were seeded in the spring, that were all taken out by slugs that seemed to maraud across their landscape down there, as well as having much too much precipitation and saturated soils for the fall sown varieties to survive. This is a fall and spring comparison for the Pullman plot. April, seeded in April versus November, 5 months difference in seeding. This is still in bloom over here. This is done blooming and is undergoing pod filling at this point in time and slightly out-yielded the spring plot in this instance. So not in all cases does the fall out-yield the spring, or the spring out-yield the fall. This is just a photograph of the trials in Pendleton, Oregon. Fall seeded November 20th versus the spring planted March 18th and harvested nearly the same time. In this case, the spring planted out-yielded the fall. And the next year, as well, the spring planted out-yielded the fall planted. And this spring planted actually had quite a bit of lodging come through. There was a severe rain event, thunderstorm event that mashed this down a little bit. But Don came in and salvaged it fairly well. And this fall seeded survived 4 days of minus 19 degrees centigrade temperatures. That gives you some idea of the temperature survival characteristics of the crop. And so with that, I'm going to basically turn it over. We might be able to delay questions to later on as well.